welcome to Not For The Faint podcast. I'm your host, Summer Cottrell.
And I am your secondary host, Alyssa Jones.
Co-host.
Yeah,
I thought we'd do a little, I don't know. I'm a talk show host today.
I love it. Yeah, I love it.
How are you, friend?
I am really good. Just got back from a cruise last weekend.
Looking tan, looking lovely.
Feeling like I look like I got leprosy because my skin is peeling.
No, you don't.
It's hot. Leprosy's in this season.
Only a 5'10 blonde girl with a tan would say, I look like I have leprosy.
Yeah, I said it like that.
You look hot.
I look like I have leprosy. I don't even know how to say that.
That's like when girls get colds and they have that like sexy, sultry voice and they're like, I sound like a man. Like, no, you don't, babe.
Fantastic, sexy voice, Summer.
Thank you. I've been practicing.
Fantastic.
Do you have anything for this week?
No, I'm eager to talk about the same thing I know you want to talk about.
So my boyfriend's sister was reported missing yesterday. Mm-hmm. I am only saying that with a humorous tone of voice because we found her, or she called us, but Andrew texted me while I was at work yesterday. So she lives out of state, and her parents came into town because she had a show. She does music. Kristen Foreman, check her out. But she had a show, and then the Holston boys had a show the next night. So her and her parents were in town. And she left to go home yesterday, and, you know, family, friends have locations for each other,
yeah.
Right?
She's a single girl traveling from state to state by herself.
Yep. So and there was like a severe weather warning. So, yep. Of course, everyone's like, let us know when you get there.
Totally.
I told her the night before at the show, I was like, hey, be safe going home.
Yeah.
Andrew texted me while I was at work and said, I'm worried. Kristen's location was last updated at a McDonald's, and it has not updated in 4 hours. And we're calling her phone, and it's going straight to voicemail.
So,
nightmare. Yeah. So at first I was kind of like, okay, like maybe her, like weird. I was like, maybe her phone is just like off for some reason. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just acting funny. But then we were also thinking like, okay, well, how is she getting home without directions?
Yeah.
You know, because like, I don't know about you. I always use my phone for directions. I don't know that
it's 2024. Who doesn't?
We have maps. I've never used a GPS in my life.
No clue.
Yeah.
I use it to get to work.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't know.
Same. Yeah. Like if I need to. So, yeah. So we're like, okay, but how is she getting home?
Yeah.
And why is the phone going straight to voicemail?
So many questions.
We haven't heard from her. It's been 4 hours. Her location isn't updating. So like more time goes by and they call the McDonald's. Okay. Actually, this is the part that I wanted to save for the podcast. So her family calls local emergency rooms near where her location last pinged.
Yep.
No sign of her. They don't have her. They don't know. They call the McDonald's to say, hey, was there anybody with her? Like when she went through the drive-thru, mm-hmm. She stayed in the parking lot. Did you guys see anything? They pulled the surveillance footage. They told us what her order was, what she got at the McDonald's.
I love how helpful they were too.
Yeah. Well, here's the fucked up part. Her family called the local police and they said, yeah, we'll go by the McDonald's. Or they said they did go by the McDonald's. And actually, I have their name. So that I can give them their lovely shout out here.
I don't know if this is actually lovely or not. It sounds like it's going to be a diss.
It's not. It's a diss. Yes. Deputy Jess Cox told Andrew's family that he went to the McDonald's to get the footage. And when they called back, they said he never came by. He never came inside. And he told her family that he went to check it out.
Oh.
And he did not.
My God.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So
we're throwing shade at you, Deputy Cox.
Do your fucking job.
What's his name? Jess Cox.
Yeah.
What's
thank it? God she's okay.
Mm-mm.
Thank God she's okay. But like, so
wow,
he didn't go in. He told
if something would have happened to her, mm-hmm. and then
they were not taking it seriously at all.
Oh.
So not only that, they filed a missing persons report because again, it's been so many hours.
Yeah.
No one knows where she is. No one's heard from her. Yeah. We don't know if she's okay, if she got in a car wreck, if she's been abducted. Like,
yep.
Our minds are just like going to the worst place possible. And so I left work a little bit early, went home to take care of the pups, went to his family's house. And I walk in. And now, to be fair, me and Kristen, I guess, have a similar description. So we both drive Jeeps. Mm-hmm. I had our new puppy, Penny, with us, who looks exactly like her dog, Grace. They're both like...
Well, yeah, she has they are. Yeah, they're both shepherd dogs.
Well, so she has a border collie, and Penny is an Australian shepherd, but they look the same.
Yeah,
they look
totally
the same.
Shepherd.
So I were about the same height, same hair color, driving same type of vehicle with a similar looking dog. I pull into the driveway and the cop walks up and he's like, "Are you the missing daughter?" I'm like, "No, like I wish I was. I'm sorry. I'm not." So they file the missing persons report with the police. And meanwhile, hours are going by and we are just sitting at the house, racking our brains for like, we called Uconnect, which apparently there's like certain tracking systems you can put on a Jeep in case it gets stolen. We're trying to get in touch with them. I called the TBI to see if they could issue, I guess, what's called an Ashanti alert. They weren't very helpful. They were like, "I don't even know what that is." I was like, "An adult missing persons alert?" Like,
yeah.
"Well, whatever the fuck you call it." He's like, "I've never even heard of that." I'm like, "Okay, well, that's okay, whatever." And he's like, "Well, we're not going to overstep. We're not going to issue that unless local law enforcement requests it." I'm like, "Okay, well, they told us that you guys had to do that. So, like, what the fuck
Clearly,
do you want me to
do?" Deputy Jess Cox isn't the one who's going to be issuing that.
Right. So, Officer Sloan comes out to the house and takes the missing persons report. He seems very genuine. He's asking us questions, all of that. He takes the report and he leaves. And so, from there, they called the Department of Homeland Security because they had, like, a friend of a friend that worked there. So, they went ahead and called. Like, we're going through everything. I'm like, "Do you guys have the passwords? Can we check her... can we check her bank card to see if she's bought gas or if she's stopped for gas or gotten food? Because like that would tell us if she's okay."
Yeah.
And it's just her phone is messed up. So hours are going by. There's a moment where we're just sitting there. Like, I can just, her parents, I could see, I mean, not just her parents, but like Andrew too, like all of us
her
were
family.
Just, yes, yeah. We were just like so concerned. We were all just sitting there. And finally I was like, "Let's go for a fucking drive. Like, yeah. I don't want to sit here. All I can think about is just the worst case scenario." And so we get in the car and we drive. And then Kristen ended up FaceTiming them like 9 hours later, like 9 or 10 hours after her phone had last pinged. Basically, her phone got frozen in an update and it was not turning on. It wasn't working. Nothing. So she had no phone, no means of contact. And she had used the GPS on her Jeep to get home. And then finally she realized like she had her iPad and she got Wi-Fi at like a gas station on the way and called us. So we are like, "Thank God you're okay. Thank God." And her dad was like, "You don't even know how happy I am to hear your voice right now. I got the Department of Homeland Security out here looking for you." She's like, "I'm so sorry." So when we get back to the house, her dad called Officer Sloan that took the missing persons report and says, "Hey, we just got in touch with her. You can call everything off, like call off the dogs, whatever." And he goes, "Oh, okay, cool. I haven't even filed it yet. So I'll just..." Yes.
Oh my.
Hours later.
Oh my God. No wonder people are missing. Thanks to no help.
Yep.
From...
shout out to those two officers.
Oh my, I haven't even, you were so fucking lucky that we found her.
Yeah.
Oh my God. This is, how do you not take that seriously? How do you not take that seriously?
And that's why we cover stories like this, because you would think that like law enforcement would be on top of it all the time. And there are plenty of law enforcement agents out there, because the guy from the friend of a friend that worked for Homeland Security, he said when Mike called him to say like, "Hey, we got her, like she's okay," he was like, "Okay, awesome. We actually we got surveillance footage of her 2 hours ago on this interstate." Like, they had seen that she was driving and they were catching up to her already. Like, they were on top of it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, these other officers are like, "Yo, go check out the McDonald's." Never fucking does.
Yeah, I'll file a missing persons report.
4 or 5 hours later. Yeah.
Well, it's good to know if I go missing, ain't no one finding me.
Yeah, so
I'm gone.
This is your cue to I don't know, put a fucking air tag in your car or some shit.
I mean, and it's also because the first 24 hours we know are the most important.
Exactly.
So knowing that, you would think there would be such hustle at least in that time.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Because, like, I mean, the possibilities, like, I was, like, my mind, I was hoping, I was like, okay, maybe her phone, like, her SIM card, this has happened to me before where my phone SIM card gets, like, because I'm terrible. I take my phone in the shower with me. I throw it across the fucking room sometimes on accident. Like, that's
on
how
accident.
I am. Yeah.
Accident.
I'm not crazy, okay? No, seriously. But it's happened to me before where there's like water damage or the SIM card in my phone got like disconnected somehow because of like water damage or just from throwing it around or whatever. And so sometimes if you've already pre-downloaded the directions for where you're going, it'll keep the directions on your phone, but you're not going to be able to get calls and stuff.
Yes.
So that's...
Or update traffic, all that
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what I was thinking probably happened. Mm-hmm. Or that was like one possibility, but then I was also like, or she got in a wreck or she got abducted.
Yeah.
And like... her, like, we were wondering if maybe when she was at the McDonald's, if someone got in the car with her and like made her drive or whatever. Like, yeah. We were just going to the worst places.
Totally.
Thank God she's okay. Love you, Kristen, if you're listening.
This episode is dedicated to you. What yeah. could have been a real life true crime story yeah. in our lives.
Yeah. I and really don't want to cover you on Not For The Faint. Yeah. So give us a call next time.
God,
no, thank dang. God she had her iPad and she got connected and called us. So
terrifying.
Yeah. In that moment, I was so in my mind, and I understand that law enforcement, they do all of these things, but I'm like, we're gonna call the cell carrier, we're gonna get into her bank, like I'm like going full citizen sleuth, like we're,
yeah,
me and Andrew ready to drive to fucking Texas. I was like, if she doesn't get home, because we knew what time she was supposed to be getting home based off the route, and they had friends in her town that we were like, okay, go, and when she's supposed to be getting home, go over there and make sure that she gets yeah. home. And if she doesn't, I told Andrew, I was like, we're gonna hit the road, we're mm-hmm. gonna go that route and see if we can find her. So anyways,
glad she's home safe.
Yeah,
you want to do some stories?
Yeah, I just want a quick life update. I'll be so quick because sure, yeah. there's so many updates. One little thing. So we bought a house. We closed on it on Tuesday. We're moving. We got a puppy. Her name is Penny Lane.
Aww.
This has all happened in the last week. We went and saw Shane Gillis, the comedian.
Oh yeah, Dylan loves Shane Gillis.
Do you like him?
No,
you don't like him.
I don't,
but you've tried him at least.
I've tried him. I watched a documentary, I watched his comedy, not I watched him on it. SNL.
Why yeah. don't you think you don't like him?
He's
why
just not funny to me.
You don't think so?
Mm-mm. He does not make me laugh.
We love him. We were crying laughing. So we went we went on last Saturday, which was 4/20.
Okay.
I was looking around at all the people in the concession line and everyone's eyes were fucking red. Everyone was stoned.
Oh my
and
God.
I just wanted to retell this joke because it's not a part of his set, so I'm not spoiling anything. He comes out and Theo Von showed up.
Theo Von.
Surprise.
Yeah.
Theo Von. Everyone awesome. Went crazy. Yeah. It was so much fun.
I don't think he's funny either, but I know him.
I love him. Yeah. We both love them. Totally. But anyways, you can tell if you thought this was funny. We cracked up, but Shane Gillis walks out and everyone's like, yeah, Shane, like, woo, whatever. And then one girl, after the applause dies down, one girl is like, I love you, Shane. And he walks up and he's like, what's up, bitch?
Oh, my God.
It was just, anyways, it was hilarious. This week has been nuts. That's my life update.
I love it.
Aww. Do you have anything or want to jump to stories?
I'm ready to jump to stories. I'm excited for this week.
These ones.
I know that you have a gory and particularly horrific one.
Yes.
And I'm obviously not excited about that kind of story, but I am eager to hear your telling of a story like that.
You know, I usually kind of like shy away from those ones, and you definitely don't.
I definitely don't, but you do, so I'm excited to hear it come from you.
Yeah. This was a request from Jesse.
Shout out to Jesse Milhouse, Dylan's brother.
Milhouse.
I was just a plan of saying Jesse Miller.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he sent this one to us on Instagram for a request, and sometimes requests are hard because you'll be like, oh, cover this one story, and then I'm looking it up and there's zero articles about it and there's no like, you know what happened and it's crazy, but it's like a 5-10 minute thing.
Oh my God, so like, often. And yeah. I'm like, I need more details.
I need to
have
more
run
to create,
with
like a whole thing.
Totally. Anyways, that is a real thing.
This one, there was so much. So
yes, I'm so excited. Let's go.
Yeah, without further ado, man, I haven't done this in so long, I feel nervous.
You got this, girl. You're a hype girl.
Thanks. Okay, so this is the murder of Warren Barnes. You ready for this?
I'm so ready.
Okay. On February 21 of 2021, this is super recent, Colorado police receive an emergency call for Brian Cohey Jr. In the middle of the night, 19-year-old Brian's car had slipped into the Colorado River with him inside. It's February. It's the middle of the night, the water is freezing, and Brian is now soaking wet. Not only does he not have a way home now because his car is in the river, but his phone is also dead. So Brian had struggled with major depressive disorder and claimed that he had gone out for a drive. He wanted to clear his head, and that's how he ended up at Blue Heron boat ramp where his car slipped into the river. So now that his car's in the river, he had to walk from the boat ramp back to the main road, and he had to flag down passerbys until someone stopped and he was able to call for help.
I'm just going to tell you right now, I am not stopping.
Yeah.
I will call.
I thought about that too.
I'll call the police, but I'll keep driving.
Yeah. But he is like a 19-year-old kid. I wouldn't either. I'm with you.
Not stopping.
But somebody did. Okay. So his mom and his dad go out to the boat ramp along with police to make sure that he's okay. They try to recover his vehicle from the river. His mom, Terry Cohey, called Black's Towing Company, and the officers file a report. So again, Brian is 19 years old, and his mother acknowledged that he's an inexperienced driver. She goes on to tell officers that she had him wait until he was 18 before they even allowed him to get his license to try to avoid stuff like this from happening.
I didn't get my driver's license until I was 18 either.
Couldn't be me.
Yeah, like I was born ready. I was 14, had my permit.
Well, I was also a year younger than all of my peers.
Yeah.
I was like super young for my grade, so everyone else was driving before me.
Oh, so you felt like, let me fucking drive. Totally.
Yeah. So his mom and dad seem pretty understanding of the situation, and on the body cam footage from the officers, you can see that everyone is making light of the situation. They're just glad that he's okay. Mm-hmm. At this point, Brian is cold, but he's fine. He's in the car. They got the heat on him, all that.
Good.
You would think that a lot of parents would be pissed about this, but Terry and her husband, Brian Sr., are making light of the situation. Brian ends up going home to get dry and get some rest while his parents hang back to deal with the towing company and finish up with the officers. It's at this point that as the car is coming out of the river, officers notice a lot of red on the back of the car dripping around the bumper. They speak with Brian's parents to let them know. It looks like blood, and they're all concerned.
Sorry, what?
Yeah.
I'm shook.
Yes. It looks like blood. And they're concerned that maybe Brian was hurt in the situation and didn't notice it.
Uh-huh.
Because the adrenaline's pumping, he's freezing. They're like, maybe he cut himself and he didn't even notice.
Mm-hmm.
So they call him back and ask Brian to do a quick self-check. He also had recently gotten a small surgery under his armpit. And so his mom was thinking maybe the sutures reopened and that's what the blood was.
And the blood ended up on the bumper?
I don't know. Well, if he got in the water and was trying to push it out, I don't know.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah.
It's feeling like Brian hit someone.
It's a little bit of a red flag.
Yeah. The red flag's waving.
Yeah, This doesn't really explain the amount of blood that's dripping on the vehicle. His little cut on his armpit, yeah. So when they're calling to check in on him, Brian is like annoyed and irritated with his mom, who is genuinely concerned for his well-being. He is the one that caused this situation for everyone else. Meanwhile, he's going home to get comfy and cozy while his parents are dealing with the consequences of his dumbass mistake.
Bro, you drove your car into the water.
Yeah.
Slipped is I what?
I don't know how one does that. How do you slip your car into the water? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, he's getting irritated with them and he's like, "Mom, I'm fine." Like fucking dumbass 19-year-old. So Brian explains to her that he had taken a class for special effects, which was true. His mother knew that he had done that and that he had a jug of fake blood in his car from that. And that's probably what the officers seen. Maybe it had tipped over and that's what all that blood was fake blood from the special effects class. And in her mind, she's like, oh, yeah, he did. Like, that's what that is, you know?
Okay.
So the family goes home and the car is returned to them. And that's all that far. Among major depressive disorder, Brian was also diagnosed with autism and ADHD. He is a weird kid. He's got a fascination for morbid things. But Terry believed that he was channeling that to become a crime scene investigator or something in that field.
Cool.
Yeah. Although Brian was odd and he was bullied throughout school, he had a friend group that accepted him for his oddities. So let's talk about some of his odd personality traits, character traits. Yes.
Hit me with it.
So one of Brian's friends, Kylan, noted that he always had an edgy personality and he loved to get a reaction out of people. His sense of humor was very dark and almost always related to death or violence. Kylan admits that a lot of people that they went to school with hated him for that reason, because he made them uncomfortable. But she always thought he was just unusual, that he had a dark sense of humor. Even her own mother knew Brian and was like, yeah, that's just his sense of humor. But one year, Brian was set to give a speech in class and he had to create an attention getter. This is something that the teacher, part of the criteria of like, if you're giving a speech, how are you going to hold the room's attention? Mm-hmm. And so he had created a whip made of masking tape that he was slapping on the desk to get people's attention. Later that day, he had whipped one of the developmentally challenged kids that was waiting at the bus stop. He also was suspended for intentionally causing a student with PTSD to have a panic attack, and he had also been suspended for weapons at school.
Oh my God, Brian is a beast.
Brian is a little more than just edgy. He's a fucking menace.
Brian is abusive.
Brian is a troublemaker. So Brian's high school English teacher, Shannon Miller, admits that at one point the faculty had a meeting with all of his teachers and guidance counselors to acknowledge that they felt that he raised a concern for safety. They were asked to keep a very close eye on him and all agreed that he was clearly a very troubled person.
Oh, my God.
Yes. One day, Brian's parents had found a kit that he had been assembling. This kit included hammers, shovels, knives, large duct tape, and a saw. He was able to convince them that it was meant for other things, but Terry and Brian Sr. were still obviously very uncomfortable with what they found in his room.
Yeah.
And they gave him the ultimatum that he had to throw it away. Get rid of it. If we find it again, we're calling the police.
They said that to their own kid.
Yes.
Wow.
They were uncomfortable that they found
that. Could you imagine having a kid and you just go in their room and you find that they're just like, they're like got a saw, they've got all these tools.
This is reasons like, not to have, yeah. To your point, this is reasons not to have a kid.
What do you do with that? My kid is just holding on to like more tools to torture murder. They've got a murder toolbox. My child has a murder toolbox. What do you do?
Yeah. What are you doing? I don't fucking know. God.
You're grounded. And then I have to stay at home with you. Yeah. You know, and like I'm locking my bedroom door.
So the next day after this incident at the dock, the next day police are back at Blue Heron Boat Ramp. A local business owner, Monique, reported that her friend, 69-year-old Warren Barnes, was missing. Warren was a local transient that she would help on various occasions. She gave him a chair so that he would have a comfortable seat while he would read outside, and she gave him $20 to buy some beer. Mm-hmm. She told him that she would see him again the next day, but he never came back, which was out of character for him. Like, it seems like he was hanging out in this area a lot.
Yeah.
So she was concerned. Warren also had a job working at People Ready, a temporary employment agency that helps people. It helps place people with various jobs. And he had worked there for 4 years and never did a no-call, no-show. But on this day, he didn't show up for work and no one had heard from him.
Huh.
Yeah. Brian Sr., Brian Jr.'s dad, obviously, he found Warren's wallet in his son's car along with a large knife. Brian Jr. claims that he had found Warren's wallet the night before and had collected it with the intention of trying to return it to the owner. But Monique is adamant that Warren would not have been down at the boat ramp for any reason.
Yeah.
At this point, there's a lot of red flags going off, obviously. But Brian's parents were desperate to believe these excuses from him were the truth. And after all, Brian seems genuine. He seems sincere. Like, no, Dad, I found it. I was going to try to return it to the owner. No, there's fake blood in my car. Like, I was just out clearing my head. Like, they're desperate to believe this. Parents
who, like, trust their kids too much, I'm just going to be honest. Yeah. I'm like, kids, if there's one person that they know who to lie to, it's their parents.
Oh, yeah.
They know how to turn it on for their parents more than anyone.
The amount of lying that I did to my parents when I was in high school. Like, I'm sorry if you're listening, Mom. I love you so much.
Totally.
Like, damn, I was lying.
That's just like, come on. Yeah. You know, that's part of the child experience. So when you've got these parents that are like, my kid would never lie to me, I'm like...
But it's also like
you're such a I'm sorry.
But the alternative is to believe that your son is a murderer. You know, like you don't.
And in this case, yeah, it's like.
You want to believe that what he's saying is true.
Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah. So feeling uneasy about everything, Brian's mom had ended up going into his room to clean up and put some things away when she made a discovery. In Brian's closet, there was a rubber container. Wondering what was in it, she starts going through the contents when she found a decapitated head and human hands.
In her child's
In his room. Closet. Yeah.
How old is he at this time?
19.
Oh,
he's a 19-year-old kid. Oh,
my God.
Yes. So Terry and her husband are both business owners. Terry ran a daycare out of her house. And there are children at her house that she's babysitting when she finds these remains.
And what does she do? Does she just...
She had to calmly call the parents and let them know that they need to come get their kids early. And she calls 911.
911 is John. What's the address? Emergency?
Hi, there is an emergency. I found something in my son's closet wrapped in a plastic bag.
Okay, what was it?
I think it's a human head.
It's a what?
I think it's a human head.
Why do you think it's that?
Because it looks like it. It's all an ear.
Is it bloody or does it, like, anything like that?
Can you just come? What? Do I have to take a picture and send it to you?
What's the address? Come? Is your son there now?
He just pulled up. We wanted to make sure he was here before we called.
How old is he?
19. He's had a little bit of a fascination with the morbid, but he was channeling it, I thought, into becoming a crime scene investigator, but not so much.
Do you think he's going to be cooperative with us?
I don't know. I don't think he'll be violent. Okay. Just came back from his son's house.
Does he have any weapons in his room, or do you guys have any in the house?
I don't know. I think that he has a shotgun, but we can certainly remove it immediately before he gets in his room. He's caught by the car now, so.
Is the bag still in the closet?
No, it's in my kitchen sink. And there's a secondary bag that I have not opened. It's currently covered with a towel.
And there's a it's second bag?
Taking, yeah, there's a second bag, though. I don't know what's in it. I didn't open it.
I'm sorry. Did he take the second bag out of the closet?
I took the second bag out of the closet and put it in the sink.
Where's Brian now?
I think he's still out front.
Then you're in the backyard now?
I am, yes, because I don't want him to hear me.
Police are dispatched to the scene, and they arrive without their sirens on. They don't want to cause any alarm. They don't want to scare him off. They approach the house, and Brian is at home outside when they walk up with friendly voices to keep the confrontation as tranquil as possible. In the sink are the remains of Warren Barnes. Understandably, Brian's parents are completely sick with horror. Terry is in the front yard sobbing on the ground while her husband, Brian Sr., tries to help the officers in to evaluate the scene.
Oh, my God.
Brian Jr. is surprisingly calm and collected, and he's cooperative with the officers, and they go ahead and escort him to the back of the cop car. The escorting officer asks Brian if he prefers for it to be warm or cold in the vehicle in case he'd like for her to turn the air on. She asks him if he's warm-blooded or cold-blooded, and he says that he's very cold-blooded and immediately backpedals to say, no, he's hot-blooded, and he prefers when it's cool. As the officer is driving Brian down to the station, he says while they're driving, it was under this bridge and that there, quote, had been a lot of violence in Grand Junction lately, which is the town that they're living in.
Yeah.
All of this time, Brian is not handcuffed. He's been escorted into an interrogation room, all without being handcuffed. He's being cooperative. At first, investigators are doing something that we do in the sales world called breaking the ice. The police are
teach me.
Yeah, it's basically just establishing history, getting to know about the person you're speaking with, establishing trust in a relationship with this person.
Yep.
The other goal of them doing this is to show that Brian was in fact capable of maintaining responsibilities and knew right from wrong to avoid a potential insanity defense.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're just getting some background about him and kind of getting a feel for who he is.
Totally.
It's at this point that Brian begins a lengthy confession explaining the real reason that his car slipped into the river that night and why there was so much blood. Brian tells investigators that he had been driving around that night and he had seen a figure idling. Warren Barnes had been sleeping under the bridge on the ground when Brian approached him with three layers of gloves on, wearing a Michael Myers mask, and began stabbing him in the neck. He just pulled up on this man.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. With a Michael Myers mask.
How fucking scary is that?
That's a nightmare. I mean, that's everyone's nightmare. And yeah.
Yeah. Brian recounts that Warren immediately began fighting back and calling out, "What are you doing? Why are you doing this?"
Yeah.
Brian says he responded, "I've been waiting to do this for a long fucking time."
To Warren or to anyone?
To Warren.
Wow.
While he's murdering him.
Oh my God. Well, like, did he, sorry, no, I meant to, what, had he been waiting to do that to Warren specifically?
Just in general.
In general. He mm-hmm. he was just he wanted itching to commit murder. To kill someone.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So Brian had stabbed Warren in the neck some 30 to 40 times until he was dead. Brian is pleased to recount the way that he murdered this innocent old man and even brags about how surprisingly easy it was. He goes into detail telling investigators how he turned animalistic and was making noises but barely even broke a sweat. He's reliving the memory in real time, and he is smiling and laughing as he recalls the murder.
This is disgusting.
Mm-hmm. At one point, he even is like referring to Warren's dead body and is like, "Is it a he or is it an it?" And the officer's like, "It's a he. That was a person." Yeah.
In what world would it be an it?
Because it's a corpse and it's not. Yeah. There's no person attached to it.
Anymore. I get it.
Once Warren was dead, Brian stood over him, calling him stinky, dirty, dirty, stinky. Although he admits that there was
good vocabulary.
Yeah. It's just so unhinged. But he admits there was not a smell to the old man. Brian had stabbed Warren in the neck so many times that he was pretty much decapitated at that point. He then took off all of Warren's clothes and cut open his stomach to see his guts and jokes about how pink they were and then apologizes for the morbid joke. Yes. Brian cut off his head, gave him a Glasgow smile. Do you know what that is?
Mm-mm.
A Glasgow
where
smile.
Where you cut, is it like the Joker?
Like the Black Dahlia.
Yeah, he cut
the sides of his face and gave him a Glasgow smile. Cut off his hands and arms and sliced up the sides of one of his legs.
Oh my God, he mutilated this man.
Oh yeah. He's having a fucking field day with it.
Wow.
After he murdered Warren, Brian went home to rest but began feeling paranoid about the police finding out what he was responsible for. He said he was worried that there may have been a print left or something, so he went back to dispose of the body. He put the body in his trunk and calls it surprisingly heavy. And drove to the boat dock. When he was dumping the body, Warren's organs slipped out of him because he was so cut up. Yeah. It's. Ugh.
It's disturbing.
It's so disturbing.
And for him, he's like getting off on it.
That's
the worst
laughing.
Part.
He's laughing while he's recounting this. The ramp is pretty steep. You would need to have four-wheel drive to get out. And so he's backing up to try to dump the body. And
the idiot drove into the water.
And his car he didn't have four-wheel drive on his car. His car slips into the river.
Good.
Yep.
You piece of shit.
And he claims he, quote, almost died.
Oh, my God.
Brian is cracking up at the fact that he was freaking out at this point. He was thinking he's going to get hypothermia. He's telling investigators this as if it was some crazy college story where you, like, almost got in trouble with the police for being too drunk. That's how he's describing this insane mutilation of this innocent.
My God.
69-year-old man that was sleeping under a bridge, minding his own fucking business. So he also had taken photos and then he deleted them to try to hide evidence, although the Secret Service was able to extract the deleted photos.
Wow.
Brian tells the officers that the rest of Warren's remains were at the site of the attack where Warren's arms and legs remained, although they weren't able to determine what had happened to the rest of the remains. For whatever reason, and I don't understand this, I don't know, the police officers are laughing when they arrived at the scene. I saw it on the body cam footage. I don't know what they thought was so fucking funny, but they were laughing when they found the rest of Warren's remains.
What?
Yeah.
While they found, they're looking at his remains, they know a dead man is there and they're laughing.
They know
it's
what
not
going.
Like, oh.
I mean, you can look it up. It's all on YouTube and you can make your own inferences
I'm
about
not,
that.
This episode is not making me feel very favorably towards
police.
Our law enforcement.
I know.
I got to tell you. And I want to be pro.
I will say the people that, I don't know about the officers that arrived at the scene, but the ones that are investigating him did a really, really good job getting all the information that they could to get a really strong defense or a really strong prosecution.
That's good. But this coupled with our intro with the two police officers with Kristen, I'm not feeling too confident
I don't love it.
In our safety.
I know. I don't love it. So when asked why Warren was the target of Brian's fucked up fantasies, yeah. Brian claims that he was targeting a homeless person because he knows that police don't care about them as much.
He's right.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, I know you guys don't really care when they die. So like,
he's not wrong.
Yeah.
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 Unfortunately, it's which so is fucked up.
And also, I want to pause because I meant to tell this at the top of the episode. If you guys are keeping up with the case here in Nashville of that kid that went missing off Broadway, he was found in the river. I have a friend of a friend that works for the TBI, Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, that said that while they were looking through the river for his remains,
they found other bodies.
They found five other bodies that were unrelated. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, how many people are dying or being murdered that aren't even being looked for?
Yeah.
Anyways, at the beginning of the interrogation, Brian is noticeably nervous. He's chugging water. He's bouncing his legs up and down. But again, as he goes on to explain to the police what happens, he loosens up. He's laughing with excitement. He gets on the ground and is showing them how he murdered this man. Yeah. Brian's teachers from high school all say that they're not surprised that Brian was capable of this, but they were just disappointed in the system. They knew that he was dangerous and disturbed, and there was nothing they could do besides just, like, quote, keep an eye on him.
That is so messed up to me, because you had said earlier that the teachers would have a meeting where they basically were, like, aware that he might present a safety
hazard yep.
to them, and not just them, but to the other students.
Yes.
But I also understand them being like, oh, well, we don't want to just pull him out of school and then he doesn't get an education, so let's just, like, monitor him. Don't.
It's the same thing where it's like, even stalking cases where it's like, this person's making me feel unsafe. Even like the Gregory Green case where that woman was trying to get a restraining order and divorce her husband, and they were like, no.
Yes. They but
like,
it's
like, don't wait until someone commits murder to be like, okay, now, or they already have committed murder and they're like, well, you got to do it again for us to really make a
It's like,
anything.
Just be quick. Like, in this case, hey, you know what? There's a safety hazard with this kid. Exactly. It's like one kid versus 12 versus a whole school of kids. Who knows what he's going to do? Yeah. Come in with a gun one day.
Exactly.
Like,
and I wrote this later on, but he did. He was fascinated with Columbine and school shootings and admits that he considered shooting up a school.
Yeah. See, it's just, I'm sorry, but like, you are going to be homeschooled.
Yeah.
You gotta go somewhere else. Can't be here.
Or like fucking hospitalized or something.
Yep.
Yeah. So Brian's initial plan, he admits, was to actually hire a sex worker, do them, and then tie them up and torture them. That was what the kill kit was for when his parents found that. And he had ended up changing his plans because they found the kill kit and he had to get rid of it.
Yeah.
So he's like, well, I can't do all that. So one of the most disturbing parts of this case is that there is literally no motive at all except for just to commit murder. Just because.
That's even more horrifying than if there was a motive. Than if Warren had like somehow just fucked him over, offended him, and he was like, oh, I'm so angry, I'm going to get revenge on this guy.
Nope.
It's more terrifying that he was like, I just have an insatiable desire
to fucking kill someone. And mutilate their body.
And it sounds like his parents... It does happen. It sounds like his parents were loving. Yeah. It sounds like they cared about him.
They wanted
the best thing for him. And some people are just not going to do good.
I know.
And no matter what you do. And that is so sad.
I don't know what changed in him. I have no idea what provoked him to do this. Because I believe as a child, he's like, I never had. It's more so these thoughts have come up more so in the last few years. And like, to be fair, the whole like, oh, he was bullied. He had a friend group and hey, you were bullied. Hey, fucking everybody is.
Yeah.
Like, welcome to being a fucking kid. Like everybody gets bullied.
Yep. Exactly.
The fuck? Like I've been bullied. So he says he wasn't really sexually attracted to it at all. Although investigators aren't sure that they believe this because of how excited he is.
Oh yeah. He's aroused.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
He had a notebook with various different notorious serial killers with their victim counts, organized versus unorganized, various MOs. He says, quote, if these people can do it, so can I. And Brian had dressed up as Jeffrey Dahmer and Michael Myers on various Halloweens.
Oh, I mean, I love a Michael Myers mask. I do. I can't say on Halloween like that in itself.
But he's
is
obsessed
not-
with them.
That's fucked up. Yeah, I'm just saying. But like, and I think I saw people dressed up as Jeffrey Dahmer this last Halloween.
Actually, Andrew was talking about doing that because he kind of looks like Evan Peters and he has the same glasses.
Can totally see
it. And he straight up was like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. That's kind of insensitive, you know?
Yeah, fair.
So, like, it's just, I guess the Michael Myers is a little more appropriate because
it's like a Scream, right? It's
exactly, like, yeah. Exactly. It's Halloween. It's a scary movie. But when you're dressing up as real life
serial killers,
and you're looking
yeah.
up to serial killers, like, that's when
it's the looking up part. Yeah.
Yeah. Creepy.
I have a dream to dress up as Eileen Wuornos for Halloween. Yeah. So
interesting.
1 year.
Get help, Alyssa. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Yeah. So, and interrogators ask Brian if he had ever told his parents about these thoughts or fantasies. And he said it was always just disguised as jokes. He once said to them, wouldn't it be funny if you sold a lipstick with mercury to those beauty pageant queens and then they got poisoned because of their pride? Brian had also rented books about the Son of Sam from the school library and discussed Columbine openly on numerous occasions. Quote, call me weird, but I think everyone has thought about shooting up their school.
No.
Not no. Yeah.
No,
you
they
are
haven't.
You are weird.
You, no, not everyone has thought that.
Yep.
Nope.
I definitely haven't. And I would go to say that a lot of people I know mm-hmm. have not.
And that comment right there to me, I'm like, you're done.
Yeah.
You can go.
Yeah.
You have, there is no coming back from this. You have to leave
you,
right now.
You cannot be in society.
Yeah. There is no, yeah.
You can't.
Goodbye.
That. Yeah. A year before the murder, Brian had also found a dead groundhog on the side of the road and skinned it, attempting to make leather out of the pelt. And he also had murdered like a local cat that had came into their yard. So basically there's a million red flags suggesting that, you know, like beforehand suggesting what Brian was working up to, yet nothing happened to prevent this. Mm-hmm. In fact, Brian's parents admit that they're shocked that he was capable of such violence. When referring back to the motive, Brian says he would do anything for fame or notoriety, and he always wondered what murder felt like. He says that he thought it would be the best feeling in the world, and he admits that he was excited, although if he could go back, he wouldn't have done it. Brian tried to plead not guilty by reason of insanity, but this was quickly rejected just because of the malice of forethought and mm-hmm. his attempts to cover it up.
Yep.
He ultimately was found guilty of one count of tampering with evidence, two counts of tampering with a deceased human body, and one count of murder in the first degree. Brian, seemingly in the interview, thought that he was maybe going to get like 15 years, but he was charged with life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Good.
Fuck you, bitch.
Fuck you, Brian.
Yeah.
You are a psychopath. There is no rehabilitating someone like that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I know. He says that he regrets what happened and he wouldn't do it again if given the chance. He said, quote, the whole thing sucks. When prosecutors ask him why it sucks, he says now he's locked up. He can't hang out with his friends. He can't play video games or get on the internet.
Oh, my God.
And at no point does he express any remorse for the victim.
Exactly. It's not like, oh, my God, I took someone's life.
I
am haunted by the memory of dismembering this human being's body.
Yeah.
No. I can't play video games.
Yeah.
I just can't play video games.
That sucks. Yeah.
It's a bummer.
There's now a chair at the memorial site on the street where Warren used to sit and remember. There's now a chair memorial site on the street that Warren used to sit and read in honor of him and to remember him. It seems like he was, you know, although he was like a transient or homeless, like he still had a place in this community and he was still missed. Like people were like, no, where is he? He was reported missing, you know, and this case, like, especially to me, breaks my heart because in Nashville we have an insane homeless population mm-hmm. of people that don't have resources, that don't have homes, that I mean are cracked out on the side of the road. Like, it breaks my heart.
Yeah.
And the thought that this man was sleeping under a bridge, completely vulnerable, and that's what resulted in him being murdered like this. A 69-year-old man that is sleeping on concrete. It just breaks my heart. That is the story of psychopath Brian Cohey Jr. and the murder of Warren Barnes.
Wow. That was
heavy duty.
That was bleak.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I do love that the community recognized him though.
I do too.
Because Brian's right. A lot of times people don't care if you're a sex worker and you go missing, mm-hmm. if you are homeless and you go missing, if you're bottom of the barrel citizen, know, like no one cares. The five bodies that they found in Nashville, like you said, no, like,
is anyone investigating that?
Or, no, because they're poor. They're on the street. Who cares?
Exactly.
So I like that the community recognized.
It just enables serial killers to think that they're like, quote, cleaning up the streets. And it's like, no, you're fucking not. Like, you're the one that deserves.
That needs to be cleaned up.
Yeah.
It's American Psycho. Do you know that scene with Christian Bale?
I actually haven't seen that. I've seen clips of that movie. I've never watched it all the way through.
Christian Bale is thirsty to kill and he kills a homeless man. There's this horrible scene where he's like about to give this homeless man money and he's like kind of toying with him.
Yeah.
And then he just kills him.
I hate it. To prey on someone so vulnerable.
Totally. Well, thank you for sharing the life of Warren with us.
Thanks for the wreck, Jesse.
Shout out, Jesse. Love you.
Hello.
Here we are. Welcome back.
Tell me a story.
I have a doozy for you.
Goodness.
Yet again. Here we are with another one.
Is this a double hitter? Because I feel like usually you have a fucking horrible one and I'm like, this cold case or something. But this one, my story was terrible and now we're about to do a double hitter.
So it's not particularly graphic, but if I were going to name just this story, I would name it This Bitch.
Okay.
Because this bitch is crazy.
So that's the title of this episode is This Bitch.
This Bitch. Yeah, okay.
This Bitch.
This Bitch.
Oh my gosh. Tell me.
Okay. Before I tell you about This Bitch, let me start this off by telling you a little bit about Reagan Hancock. Reagan was born November 14th, 1998 in Hope, Arkansas.
Same year as me.
Oh, 1998? Little babies. Yeah. Sweet little babies. She was a proud mom to her first daughter, 3-year-old Kinley, and in 2022, she was pregnant with her second child. Reagan loved being a mom, and she took the job very seriously. Friends said that she was always there for them and anyone who needed her. Whether you had known her for 5 minutes or 5 years, she would drop everything to show up for you when you needed her. Reagan was also happily married to a really great guy named Homer, and together the two of them were anxiously awaiting the birth of their second daughter named Braxlyn. 1 year prior to this time, though, in 2019, Reagan hired a girl named Taylor Parker to be hers and Homer's wedding photographer. After the wedding, Reagan and Taylor, the two of them, they remained Facebook friends, and they just chatted occasionally, nothing crazy. But in 2022, as 22-year-old Reagan is pregnant with Braxlyn, she sees 27-year-old Taylor Parker posting about her own pregnancy as well. Since they're both pregnant, they both are expecting girls, they start talking a lot more on Facebook, and they build somewhat of a friendship. Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about Taylor Parker, because I need you to understand who this bitch is.
Can you tell me what she looks like?
So great question. She was hot.
Okay. Did I get more than that? Just that she's hot.
So she used to be pretty overweight, and I'll get to it a little bit.
Okay.
So if you look at, she was overweight. She was like considered obese, and then she ended up having a surgery where she lost some weight, and she was a pretty, pretty girl.
Okay.
Period.
Nice.
Yeah. Both her and, I mean, yeah, Taylor's a pretty girl. Shockingly pretty.
Okay.
Yeah. For what she does. Not that pretty girls can't do that. It's, you know, but like you almost kind of expect. Totally.
That's why people thought like Ted Bundy was fine is because he's good looking.
Exactly. Like, there's an element of that when you see her. Yeah. Like, oh, what?
It's almost like in Twilight when Edward is so good looking and he's like, everything about me invites you in.
Oh my God, I love it. Because it's so bad.
Yeah, it's so good, cheesy, though.
But it's so good. It like. God, I could watch it on repeat.
Same.
Ugh. Okay, so Taylor Parker. Taylor Parker had a difficult childhood, not because of anything I could find on her family, but because she was considered obese growing up. Mm-hmm. So she had a really tough time with other kids and had struggled with low self-esteem. Her weight caused her to really just hate who she was, and so she would make up stories and lie constantly as a way to pretend to be someone other than who she really was. When Taylor was only 8 years old, she told the kids at school that she had cancer.
Okay.
She did not have cancer.
This just... bitch.
By the time she was in high school, she would lie to her friends about having a boyfriend, and anytime they would ask for pictures, she would come up with some excuse as to why she didn't even have photos. She would also tell her friends she was pregnant, like, multiple times, and then multiple times she would say that she miscarried. Just all lies.
Okay.
Towards the end of high school, Taylor actually did get pregnant by her boyfriend Tommy Wade Casey. They went on to have one more child together, and following the birth of her second child in 2015, Taylor Parker underwent a full hysterectomy, which, for those of you who might not be familiar with female anatomy, it's where they fully remove your womb. So pregnancy is impossible after this procedure. After that, Taylor and Tommy, they soon divorce. And we don't know exactly why, but we do know that Taylor did not have custody of her two children. Custody was given to the father.
That's odd.
It is odd.
That's uncommon.
It's a flag, right? We don't know why, but we know that's weird.
Waving in the air.
Yep. We got our first flag. Not our first. Are you kidding me? We've got a lot of flags here.
She lied about cancer.
Yeah. It's kind of a flag.
Yeah.
Around this time, Taylor is post-divorce, and she has some sort of procedure, again, like I said, that makes her lose a ton of weight, probably gastric bypass.
Yeah.
So she drops a ton of weight and is now a skinnier and hotter Taylor, but still just as psycho. Mm. It's at this time she marries her second husband, Hunter Parker. Their marriage was filled with lies, because that is just who Taylor is. She is a liar. She mostly in their relationship just lies about her medical conditions, like how she has seizures and cancer and a bunch of other shit. None of it that's real. She also was a known catfisher online. You know, the usual.
You have to be so unhinged to do that.
I know.
Someone made a fake profile of me.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, they made a fake profile of me and took all of my photos, took my name.
Who was? Did you know who they was?
I have no idea.
What if it was me?
Okay, I'm going to be anxious about that for the next 3 weeks. No, I'm kidding.
But oh my gosh.
It happened to my girlfriend from work too, but it was like old account got hacked. Like, and I mean, it had like 200 followers. Like, it was following all of my friends, all of my family.
This is a freaky.
Yeah, it was disturbing. I was like, who the fuck are you?
Oh my God.
Creepy.
What if it was someone you know, though? You know what I mean? That makes it even creepier.
Yeah.
Just saying. So, needless to say, Hunter and Taylor's relationship is short-lived. And in April of 2019, Taylor and Hunter separate. Just weeks after their separation, though, Taylor starts a new relationship with Wade Griffin. As we get to know him, though, it's safe to say that he is a bit gullible. Wade owned a small cabin in Bowie County, Texas, and Taylor really liked his home. So much so that she decided she wanted to move in with him. But instead of letting the natural course of their relationship take place, Taylor did what Taylor does best. She comes up with a totally fake story, telling Wade that she feared for her life. She told him that she comes from a family of multimillionaires because they owned a lot of oil-producing land in Texas. She went on to tell him that her grandparents just transferred, you know, a small fee of $6 million into her bank account, and that her mom, Shauna, was so upset that she didn't have access to the money as well. Taylor goes on to tell Wade that her own mother, Shauna, had hired a hitman to kill her. You would think that this is where the story stops, but no, there's more. She also tells Wade that the hitman tried to take her out, but that police caught up to him just in time and a shootout began between the police, the hitman, and the Mexican mafia. Oh. Literally no clue where the Mexican mafia came from. It's like she just pulled it out of her butt. But
oh my God.
This is literally what Wade remembers Taylor having told him. She then tells Wade that her mother was brought into custody after this big shootout where she then hung herself. Wade did think to ask a good question, which was, well, why didn't I hear about this on the news?
Yeah.
And Taylor was like, oh, like it was like super kept under wraps by the media. And Wade was like, okay, that sounds good. So thus, Taylor moves in with Wade.
He's like, she's hot.
Yeah, exactly. You hot.
She's a 10, but her mom got in a shootout with the Mexican mafia.
Oh, my gosh. Now, at first, that's funny. Okay, now, at first, Taylor made herself indispensable to Wade. When he was at work, she would take care of the home, the livestock on their land, and would cook meals for them in the evening. When Wade's mother first met Taylor, she even said she really liked her, thought she was very personable. But when his mom heard that she didn't have custody of her own kids, a red flag was raised in her mind. Mm-hmm. A mom usually has to do something pretty bad to not have custody. But it was just a feeling she had, and she didn't do anything with the news. She just kind of filed it away.
Did... Maybe she said that she forfeited custody.
Maybe. That's I couldn't find anything
of it. But even still, that's just as much as a red flag. And like, you don't want to be in your own kid's life.
Exactly. And I will just say, I'm not dropping any names or stories here, but I know of a girl who gave up custody of her kids and ended up being batshit. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. You know, just saying.
It's not in your human nature as a mother.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. It's, yeah.
It's just not human nature.
And it always, when she would talk about it or just knowing that about her, it was like a huge red flag for me. I was like, yeah. I think you're crazy.
Yeah.
And she was.
Definitely.
So it was fair. After being together only a short time, Taylor told Wade that they should buy a new house together. Taylor told him that she wanted to buy a multi-million-dollar home, you know, with the $6 million that her grandparents just gave her. Wade loved the idea. So they ended up finding a $3.5 million home that they were going to buy. They even announced the exciting news to Wade's family on Christmas, telling them that it would be a place for the whole family to come and live, to duck hunt, whatever their heart desires. The whole family had a big celebration over this at Christmas time. After this, Taylor gives Wade an $8 million check and tells him to go cash it. So he goes to the bank with his $8 million
this
check.
Dumbass.
Bless him.
This bitch and this dumbass.
Just bless this bitch and this dumbass.
I shouldn't say that. I don't know what this man is about to get into. I shouldn't say that. But
you're fine. Okay. It's fine. Okay, it okay. is fine. Okay, cool, say that. Cool. He is. Okay. Bless him. He is just. He, okay. Oh, gosh.
Got it. I'm so curious to see where this is going.
So he goes to the bank with this $8 million check, and they're like, yeah, no. Not only is there no money in this account, but you need to have a wire transfer for this kind of money.
Right.
Like, but Wade had no idea because he had never dealt with this kind of money before.
Yeah.
So for months, Taylor kept telling Wade, dude, the funds haven't cleared yet, but they will. The funds are going to come. And she would continue to write him checks and tell him in like somehow the day that he would go to check it, like it would just all fall through. Like, and eventually the whole thing ended up falling through. And she ended up blaming her mother for locking her out of the family funds and orchestrating issues with the banks and wire transfers. You know, all before Taylor's mom, quote unquote,
hung herself,
killed herself. Exactly. Still, Taylor urged Wade to buy whatever he wanted, telling him that the money would come through eventually. So he went out, he buys a $29,000 ATV, a $92,000 pickup truck. She also promised his dad that she would buy him a whole new barn and tractor once the money came through. So Wade's dad even goes out and buys a $63,000 tractor. The whole family thinks Taylor is just this rich oil heiress and is dating Wade from Texas.
Wow.
But shocker, no money ever comes and the tractor and everything else was repossessed. But anyway, I mean, they still keep going. Oh, they still keep riding this wave.
Guys.
Eventually, Taylor started to feel like there was something coming between her and Wade. Gonna go out and live here and say it's probably, you know, the lies,
yeah.
What do I know at this point?
No, that's actually really healthy for relationships, Alyssa.
You're right.
It's actually a really healthy relationship.
Pro tip,
lie.
Lie your face off.
Lie your ass off, girl.
Okay, so at this point, Taylor sends Wade a text that reads, I want you to take into consideration my part. You haven't touched me, kissed me, or anything in over a month. It's lonely, and that's something I need in our relationship. You used to do it, so I want it back. Wade writes back, I'll pass.
Oh, no. You're kidding.
So cold.
You're kidding. Oh, my God.
Could you imagine getting that from Andy?
The way he would catch these hands. I'm kidding. But, oh.
I'll pass.
Uh-uh. You got me fucked up.
But they must have done it at some point, because in February of 2022, Wade comes home to see baby stuff on the counter. Taylor told him that she was pregnant. But do you remember that time?
I thought she had a hysterectomy.
Mm-hmm. That tiny procedure Taylor had back in 2015, the one where Taylor literally had her womb removed. So she has no uterus to have a child, but here she is saying she's pregnant.
Okay, so she's either lying about having had the hysterectomy or she's lying about being pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, we'll get that. You're right. One or the other, right? One or the other.
Yeah, I don't know what she's lying about now.
So she told him that she had gone to the doctors that day and that they told her that she was 4 weeks pregnant with twins. I don't even know if you can know that early if you're pregnant with twins.
Wait, how many weeks is she?
4 weeks.
Oh, no. What? Bitch. This bitch.
But for Wade, this is the first time, his first time expecting a child, and he was really excited to be a dad. Like, he just was, like, over the moon. Taylor told everyone that their babies were due September 28th, 2020. But then suddenly, one of the babies died. Taylor texted Wade from one of her many burner phones, pretending to be her own dad, Mark. Mark, quote unquote, told Wade that that Taylor had been in a wreck and that the doctor said that she lost one of the babies.
Okay.
Yeah. So Taylor and sweetheart Wade, he believes it. He goes on believing it. He says, okay, Taylor was in a wreck. She lost one of the babies, but we've got one more.
He's committing.
Taylor was posting on Facebook telling everyone that she was pregnant and was buying maternity clothes. She even bought a fake ultrasound and posted on social media. And it's at this point that her and Reagan really started to connect. Because remember, Reagan is pregnant too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And both of them are pregnant with girls. Taylor made everything a huge deal with this baby. She even had a gender reveal party. And
wait, so is she really pregnant?
No. She ain't pregnant. Oh! I'm just going to let you know, she ain't pregnant. She ain't pregnant.
I knew it.
She had that. She ain't got no womb.
I was like, okay.
So they had a gender reveal party. And she wanted to bring in a baby cow in with a pink bow around its neck to symbolize that they were pregnant with a girl. They even picked out a name for their baby, which was Clancy Gale. Again, this baby does not exist, and it never did. Clancy Gale is a fraud.
Okay.
It's a fraud.
Okay.
Does not exist.
No, but like, why, even if you were having a baby, that Clancy.
I know, why would you?
Imagine holding a baby named Clancy.
Imagine looking into the eyes of your partner and saying, I love you, Clancy.
It's 2020.
It's, yeah, exactly.
Don't,
oh my
do
God.
That to your child.
This whole time, Taylor is also wearing a fake silicone baby bump that she ordered online. Wade later said that she always slept with her clothes on and never really liked him to see her naked, so he never knew. He also admitted that, yeah, it was a bit weird that she would tell me when the baby kicked, but when I would go to touch it, it would stop kicking. But, like, the bump felt so real.
This man. Yeah,
no.
I mean.
She even takes maternity photos with the baby belly strap on, which we will post.
Okay.
After the gender reveal, Wade's friend Cody tells him that something doesn't seem right with Taylor and that he didn't think Taylor was actually pregnant. Wade then takes this information and confronts Taylor about it, and she's pissed. She fights with Wade, telling him, how can you even question the mother of your child like this?
I'm scared. I feel like I know where this is going. Mm. I'm scared.
But Taylor knew that she had to redirect Wade's attention away from her lies and onto something else. So she decided that her mother, Shauna, who killed herself, is going to resurface. and start to message Wade again. That's right. Taylor manages to kill her own mom off, then bring her back to life and have her resurrected mother begin reaching out to Wade, starting drama and threatening him. She does admit that she lied about her mother's death to Wade. She told Wade that she lied about her mother being dead because the police told her she needed to for everybody's safety. You know, because of the Mexican mafia and stuff.
Right.
And Wade believes it.
Wade, if you're alive, we need to talk. We need to talk.
So they both now, they have a common enemy, which is Taylor's mom. So the whole baby not being real thing is kind of forgotten, and they rekindle their relationship for this time being. Just like, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. Thankfully for Taylor, this is all happening during 2020, peak COVID. So it wasn't difficult for her to fake doctor's appointments. Although Wade really wanted to go with her, Taylor would say, sorry, they don't let anyone in the office. So he would take her to the doctor's and then just sit in the car for hours while she did who knows what. Because you know she wasn't going to the doctor's.
Right.
He'd sit there.
She's going to sit for at the Panera, stocking up on some mac and cheese.
Texting him with her burner phones as her mom. Yeah. I don't know.
Unhinged.
Totally. Shortly before the baby's due date, Wade gets a real text from Taylor's first husband. He tells Wade that he saw on Facebook Taylor talking about being pregnant, but was like, hey, bro, just letting you know, she could not possibly be pregnant because she had a hysterectomy. And, you know, anatomy.
Right.
Again, Wade confronts her, and again, she gets upset. She even says during the fight, everyone is going to be so embarrassed when I deliver my baby.
Okay.
Yeah. So remember, her due date was September 28th, 2020. So she's scrambling right now to figure out how to prolong the delivery date. So she tells Wade that she's going to be induced on October 6th. But when that date comes, she ends up not being able to go because somebody had called in a bomb threat to the hospital where she was scheduled for her delivery. It was later discovered that the phone call came from Taylor's phone to the hospital. And she also used the same voice changing app that she would sometimes use when leaving threatening voicemails to Wade pretending
Why
to be
is
her
that
mother.
A thing? Why does that exist?
A voice changing app?
Why?
Great question.
What purpose does that serve other than to deceive people?
It's a great question, Summer.
The fuck?
Maybe we should just do a voice changing app, a whole episode with a voice changing app.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it has a purpose.
I'm just gonna talk like this for a whole episode.
Oh my god, I feel like our listeners would be like, skip.
Yeah, we're done. No, they're like, hey,
we'll come back next
week. Yeah, fuck that.
Taylor insisted that her new date was moved to October 9th, and that on that Friday, everybody would know that she had been pregnant, and they would feel stupid for saying that she wasn't. So that Friday, Taylor is telling Wade she's going to go get induced. She told him that because he had already missed 5 days of work waiting for the baby, he should go into work so he doesn't get fired, and that she'll meet him at the hospital later that day. Now, in the last few weeks leading up to this, though, Taylor had been searching local places that pregnant women frequent, like OBGYN clinics, mm-hmm. childbirthing education classes. She was even seen on camera even frequenting these places, like just hanging around. Mm. She was also writing down license plate numbers trying to search them on Google to try and locate their home addresses of pregnant women. Taylor had also been watching videos on YouTube on how to perform a vaginal delivery and how to perform a C-section. And how to deliver a 35-week baby. And 35 weeks happened to be just how far along Reagan Hancock was on the day of Taylor's delivery. So it's now afternoon on October 9th, and Taylor is pulled over by a cop for speeding. When the officer walked up to the car's window, he saw that Taylor was holding a very new, very fresh, very just born baby with the umbilical cord still attached to the baby, and the other end of the cord was coming out of the pants of Taylor. She's hysterical and tells the officer that she's just given birth and that she's terrified for her baby's life because it's barely breathing. The paramedics, they soon arrive, and as they're rushing her and her baby to the hospital, they have to cut off her pants to make sure there's no trauma or to see what's going on down there. And when they cut them off, the placenta, the womb sac that holds a baby, the other end of the umbilical cord, fell out onto the floor.
Is Reagan dead?
We'll get there. Once at the hospital, Taylor initially refused to allow nurses to do a medical exam on her. Eventually, she does agree, and to no one's shock, the exam reveals that not only did she have a hysterectomy and physically could not have given birth to the baby, but that there was no pregnancy hormones in Taylor's body. DNA results of the baby also showed that it was not her child, but the child of Reagan Hancock. This baby was Braxlyn Hancock, the second child of Reagan and Homer. And it hurts my heart to say that Braxlyn did not survive. She had been deprived of oxygen for too long before making it to the hospital. Around the same time, while Taylor is in the hospital, Homer has recently received a text from his neighbor saying that his dog is loose in the backyard. He's trying to get a hold of Reagan, but he didn't hear anything back, which was not like her at all. Mm-hmm. So he starts panicking, also knowing that she's home with their three-year-old daughter. Mm-hmm. He calls Reagan's mom on the way back to the home as he's rushing back. And Reagan's mom is the first to arrive at the horrific scene. Her mother. Her mother walks in to find her own daughter, Reagan, lying in a huge pool of blood.
No.
There was blood splattered everywhere, all over the walls, the ceiling. There also appeared to be clumps of Reagan's hair on the couch.
Oh, my God.
Reagan had a fractured skull, a broken nose, as well as deep incisions and stabs from a scalpel along her neck. She was cut open from hip to hip, and her uterus and baby Braxlyn had been pulled out.
She's dead.
She did not make it. Yeah.
I've heard a couple stories like this where the mom survives. So the whole time I'm like, but does she survive? But does she survive? Because
she didn't just do that, though. Yeah, it was the stab. Yeah, she did. Yeah, it was the neck.
I mean, with those injuries, you couldn't.
Yeah. It was no time at all before all the pieces were put together. It took a jury. I will also say here, Reagan said that she goes over there, basically that Reagan, or Taylor says that Reagan invited her over to the house. Mm-hmm. And that when she was over there, Reagan started having like some sort of health complications and was like, cut my baby out. But then when Taylor was like, no, I don't want to, Reagan started attacking Taylor. And it was just, she just created this whole nut job story when really all that happened was she showed up, she killed her, and that was it.
Shut the fuck up. Just shut up.
Yeah.
Just stop talking.
Yep. But it was no time at all before all the pieces were put together. It took a jury 1 hour to deliberate before Taylor Parker was convicted of capital murder and was sentenced to death.
Good.
I agree. She became the seventh woman to get the death penalty in Texas and the youngest.
Wow.
And she remains on death row today. I really hope that Reagan's daughter and husband are ultimately able to heal from this and find some peace because Reagan's daughter, who was 3 years old, was home at this time.
The PTSD that kid is going to have.
I know.
Or already has.
I know. It just the trauma there. Mm. So I hope the best for her and
God,
Homer and their family. But that is the story of Reagan and Braxlyn Hancock. And this bitch
is about to catch these fucking hands.
I love that. I don't know if I've ever heard that. I love it so much.
You haven't
much.
Heard that?
No, I love it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness.
Fuck her. What a bitch.
I know. She a dirty bitch.
Oh my God. That is so unhinged.
She's crazy.
Why are people like this is the biggest thing that I can't understand. I can't wrap my head. You know, when there are murders that are like, oh, they did it for life insurance. They did it for mm-hmm. this or for that. But it's like, why?
Yeah.
Why? I understand that she was like had to come up with a baby, but it's like, why did you lie about it in the first? Like, why do you lie about everything?
Totally.
I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I just don't get it.
It's just psychotic.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
I want to see in the coming years, especially with true crime being a more up and coming like genre, I guess. I want there to be more scientific data. Like I want to see what happens in people's brains that make them this way. And like you and I watched that documentary called Crazy Not Insane,
mm-hmm.
where like it shows the differences of like multi-personality disorders. And
yeah.
there is a lot of times there are commonalities with people that have severe trauma as children that go on to behave this way. And so many of the murderers that we talk about, we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know what happened to them.
Yeah.
But a lot of times there is severe either sexual or physical trauma that happens to them as a very young child that they develop personality disorders because they their brain, it's a trauma response.
Yeah.
So I'm so curious to see what the science is behind this. I hope that in the coming years that like, because the other thing is like, I don't know, like other countries don't have, and now to be fair, the US is massive, but it's like, I feel like this isn't as common in other places as it is in the US. Not impossible or not, you know, unheard of, but.
And I think for Taylor though, I think her story is just, you know, I think people who lie, I'm not a licensed therapist, so don't, but I think it makes sense that people who lie have a lower self-esteem.
Yeah.
You know, I think you aren't confident in who you are and your own story and your own life. So you lie to make yourself appear to be someone different who people would like.
Yeah.
And I think her obesity at a young young age and that insecurity and low level of self-esteem, she probably only found favorability or felt important
if she was lying about whatever.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, I wonder like what's different? Like what's different? Same thing like with Brian Cohey, like what's different with him that everybody gets bullied? Like everyone gets bullied. Why are you this way? I can't wrap my head around it. It's so beyond me. That was a fucked up story.
I was just going to say, wasn't it different? It was different.
That was different. I will say quite a few of your stories have been very interesting where you're telling me and I'm like, where is this going?
Where is this going? You guessed it though. You called it.
I knew it.
You did. I try to like leave a little bit like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But, that was good. Nice job.
I was putting the pieces together because I remember you talked about Reagan at the top and I was like, okay, so why are we coming back? Where are we coming back? Wow, great story. Or great job telling it. Horrible story.
Horrible story. I know. Horrible story. Great job telling it. Yeah. Ditto.
Okay. Well, do you have anything else?
Mm-mm, I don't.
Okay, friends, go ahead and download this and send it to a friend. Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on TikTok. Follow us on all the platforms.
Just show us some love.
Yeah.
Show us some love and.
Yeah, another shameless plug by me every episode.
I'm your hype girl.
I know you show are. Us some I appreciate lovin'. That. Yeah. Yeah, let's Woo. Get it. Well, cool. Well, I guess we'll have another episode for you next week.
We sure will. And we'll smell you later.
Bye.